is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hello, this is Brad Stamps, head boys basketball coach at Fayetteville High School, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content.
Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And it is not quite Thanksgiving Eve, we're one day away, but we are rolling closer.
Oh, it's Thanksgiving Eve, Mike. It's 12.
It is to you?
It's 12:15 a.m.
I guess you're right. So we are starting tonight's podcast, actually this morning's podcast, at 12:15 a.m. here on November 24th. So you are 100% correct. Anyway, we are moving along in the NBA season. And I guess you have a quiz for me, though, before we jump into LeBron, Isaiah Stewart, Malice in the Palace, too.
Yeah. So I've got two starters for you tonight, Mike. Two starters for you about whether who they play for. So I'm gonna. The first one's a guy that I don't know that you've ever heard of. Maybe I'll be wrong. And the second guy, I know you've heard of him. So which one would you like me to start with?
Let's start with the hard one, so that maybe I can finish on a high note.
Okay, Chimezie Metu.
Now I know this. That is. I've definitely heard of him.
Okay, he started five games this season.
The Orlando Magic.
No.
Okay, hold on.
He played for USC. He's been in the league for 4 years, Mike.
I know I've read / heard.
He's been with the team for the same team for all 4 years. Oh, no, that's a lie. He has not been with the same team for all 4 years.
Okay. I know, man, I know I've read that he started. I'm drawing a blank. Is it a Western Conference team?
It is a Western Conference team. It's a team we're going to talk about in a little bit.
All right, let me just look here at my Western Conference team and see if anything jogs my memory as I'm going through and looking.
I tried to give you a hint there, Mike.
I understand. He is a starter for the Sacramento Kings?
Yep. He's played in 8 games and he started 5 of them. Yes.
All right. So I wasn't quite on top of it, but I at least had heard of him. So that was one.
All right. This guy I know you heard of. He was a Cavalier.
Okay.
Taurean Prince has started for this team. He's only started 1 game.
Taurean Prince. What team is Taurean Prince on? Is Taurean Prince on the... Man, I have no idea. Well, he was part of...
Okay.
What trade was he part of? He was part of a trade. Is he still with the team that he was traded to?
Yes.
That would be the Houston Rockets.
Nope.
He didn't go to Houston?
Nope.
He didn't go. Did he go to Brooklyn?
Nope.
Who else was in that trade?
Well, our best player.
Portland.
Our best pickup of the offseason, Mike.
The Timberwolves.
There you go. There you go. Good job.
All right. Well, I knew there were some transactions in there. All right. Well, I didn't do too well tonight.
No, that's all right. Listen,
I did better than Isaiah Stewart's face.
Oh, all right. Perfect transition. So I don't know if you saw this live. I mean, this was like during the NFL, like last night. It was like in between the NFL games. It was Sunday. So it was in between the NFL games. Or it was Sunday night, right? Yeah.
Yes, it was Sunday.
Yeah, it was Sunday night. Yeah, because I talked about it at school yesterday. So it was definitely on Monday, I suppose. It was on Sunday between the night game and the late game. I just all of a sudden see LeBron ejected, and I'm like, what in God's green earth happened? And then I just started Twitter searching, and oh my God, you got LeBron. Now listen, LeBron is never been claimed. I don't think we can ever say that he's a dirty player. I genuinely don't think that he had ill intent. I think he was annoyed. I think Isaiah Stewart was getting all up in his business. I think he annoyed him, and LeBron, you know, lashed out a little bit. And I don't think he had any intent to do what he did.
I didn't know you were a LeBron apologist.
So you're going to say he did that? You're saying he punched him intentionally like that?
Oh yeah.
Oh come on,
Mike. When you see the close up, like clearly they're entangled, and clearly LeBron's annoyed, but you could clearly see him look, and then swing. Now is he trying to bloody his face? No, but I think he was clearly trying to hit him. I don't think there was any question that he was clearly trying to hit him.
Oh, come on, Mike.
Do you think it was unintentional?
No, I think he was. I think you're right. I think he was intentionally trying to hit him. He was trying to hit him.
I'm not saying LeBron. LeBron's not a dirty player. It's not like that play itself. I don't even know if I would term it dirty, because those two guys are tangled up, and I didn't really see much about what went on, if there was anything that went on between the two of them previously, but everything that I've read, seen, heard, watched from Isaiah Stewart is that the guy plays hard and he competes, and he's one of those guys that is going to get under your skin and is going to annoy you.
He's like a Draymond Green kind of player, right?
And I'm sure that's what he was doing to LeBron. But when you watch that replay, and I'm not talking about the one that's far away where you can't really tell what happens, but there's the one close-up shot where you clearly see LeBron's face turn, look, and then he swings. So I guess what I'm saying is, in the context of, is that a dirty play? I don't know if I'd say it's a dirty play, but there's no way that there wasn't intent to swing
and hit Isaiah Stewart. Now, is he trying to bloody his face? No, but clearly he was trying to hit him. And you can define that however you want to define it. It's not like he wound up and hit him with an overhand right, but clearly, to me, I think the intent was there that he was going to hit this guy.
Yeah, I could see that. I always say, like, he obviously didn't intentionally try to hurt the guy. So as soon as I saw it, though, I was like, well, he's going to get suspended for a game. My dad's like, they'll never suspend him. I'm like, they're going to suspend him. And then I saw that he was playing the Knicks. They play the Knicks tonight. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know. Are they actually going to suspend him for a game when he's supposed to play at MSG? Like, think about all those fans that paid big money to watch the Lakers, Knicks. But they did. They suspended him. They suspended Isaiah Stewart two games for continuously trying to attack LeBron and going after LeBron. DeAndre Jordan was hilarious. DeAndre Jordan was hilarious playing like free safety there. And then Carmelo, did you see Carmelo after the game? Did you see the little thing? So Carmelo is standing there. The game's over. Like, they're just kind of standing at the corner. And then one of the Pistons players like came over for some reason. And I don't really know why. And Carmelo's like, what are you doing over here? What are you doing? He goes, Isaiah better not come over here. Like, Melo's just, you know, Melo, he's just being goofy and stuff. But at the same time, like, at the end of the day, I wasn't super surprised that Stewart got two games and LeBron got one. I mean, LeBron did try to apologize right after. Like, you could tell he went, like, if you watched the video through. Like,
yeah, he went to him
and apologized. Like, he clearly wasn't. If anything, he was trying to hit the guy, like, in the shoulder or in the chest or something like that, more than likely. Like, and he obviously didn't. He missed, like his free throws in clutch situations. But I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like, it's surprising that he got suspended for a game. At the same time, it is what it is. This isn't gonna make a black mark on LeBron's legacy. I mean, did Jordan ever get suspended for a game?
No.
Well, except for when he was gambling. Oh wait, no, that's not legitimate, Mike. I'm sorry.
Zero ejections is what I read. He had zero ejections.
What was LeBron's other ejection?
It was, I don't know what it was for. I read, though, somewhere I saw that it was when he was with Miami against the Cavs that he got ejected, but I don't remember the
circumstances. How do I not know that? How do I not remember that? Hold on, I'm gonna look it up while
while
you're talking. So,
my take with Isaiah Stewart is, I'm surprised. I guess since LeBron theoretically is the instigator, right? Because he throws the first punch, and Isaiah Stewart is retaliating and then knocking over coaches and security guards to try to get to LeBron. I'm kind of surprised. That was such out of control behavior that I almost thought that Stewart would get more than two games. When you're breaking away three different times and running people over out on the court to try to get to LeBron, that seemed a little bit over the top. I do think that had that punch not drawn blood, I guess if Isaiah Stewart had reacted in the same way, he probably would have ended up with the same result. But if it doesn't draw blood, you wonder if Isaiah Stewart is as mad as he was. And you wonder if the reaction would have been as strong as it was had the punch not drawn blood. But I kind of thought maybe Stewart would get more just because he was so out of control in the aftermath of the punch. And I'm not surprised LeBron got suspended, simply because when you throw that punch, sort of a backhand punch. But again, I don't think you can deny that it was intentional. You can see LeBron eye him up and then hit him. So I guess I'm okay with the one game for LeBron.
Yeah,
two games
so
for
LeBron
Stewart.
Was suspended in 2017 when he was a member of the Cavaliers in a game against the Heat. In the third quarter of that game, James believed he was fouled on a shot and turned to argue with Fitzgerald after not hearing a whistle. It only took a few seconds of arguing, but James was tossed from the game with an entire quarter to go on a double technical.
So he got
a double technical. The Cavs ended up winning that game. But I obviously don't remember that. I'm surprised I don't remember. Oh, they were up. That was the game. Oh, now I kind of remember it, because they were up like 30 points and then he got ejected and they won by 11. I do kind of remember that now, like, vaguely.
I got nothing vague. On that. Oh. I got nothing on that one.
So, anyways. So, yeah, he got two technical fouls, like, in the matter of seconds, so.
All right, bigger pictures. We haven't really talked much about the Lakers, and I don't know that we need to spend a ton of time on them, but they're now 9-10. What's your take on where they are?
They're not winning the West, Mike. That's what they're not. I feel pretty good about stating that at this point. You know, maybe something will happen, but maybe this will be like the 2018 Cavs, and there's going to be trades that are going to happen before the trade deadline. The team's going to look completely different than it does currently, and then maybe they can figure it out. But like, listen, this Laker team isn't beating the Warriors. This Laker team is not beating the Suns. I could see them beating Utah, because I mean, we've talked at length at times past, like, Utah is a different team in the playoffs. Could they beat the Clippers? I think they could beat the Clippers.
Here's what it comes down to for me. LeBron, I think, for the first time, we're starting to see some subtle signs of his decline in terms of he's not getting to the rim nearly as much. He's shooting way more threes. He's not getting to the free throw line the way he used to. And you can still look at his stat line, and it's still pretty impressive for any player in the league. It's slightly down for LeBron. But I just don't think that night in and night out, he can be the same kind of guy that he was when he was carrying those inferior Cavs rosters in the last year or two. I just don't think that he's going to be able to be playing at that level. And then you go back to when Anthony Davis first comes to Los Angeles, and what did everybody say? Oh, LeBron's going to start to defer, and Anthony Davis is going to take over and be your main number one guy. And if Lakers fans haven't figured it out yet, that day is not coming. And if it ever does come where Anthony Davis is your number one player, I don't think that he's the guy that can lead you to an NBA championship as your number one. And I don't think LeBron, when you look at what he would have to go through in order to carry the Lakers to a title this year, unless he's holding something back for the playoffs, which I guess is possible, but I just don't see it. I don't see LeBron having the same individual capability of putting a team on his back night in and night out the way he's done in the past. And I don't see Anthony Davis being the type of personality that's going to snatch this team and put them on his back when that's necessary. I just don't see the alpha in Anthony Davis. And then that hasn't even touched on what do you do with Russell Westbrook and who he is and what he is and how does he mesh with those two guys, which seemingly at this point isn't working the way that I think – I don't want to say the way people thought, because I don't know really anybody who thought that it was going to work out especially well, but it clearly hasn't worked to this point. They haven't figured out what to do or how to use him. You can make the argument that in his last two stops in Houston and in Washington, it took a while before Westbrook was incorporated into what those teams were doing, and he kind of found his way, and they kind of found his way their way with him. But the fact of the matter remains that at the end of games, Westbrook's decision-making is going to continue to be questionable. Are you going to be able to put him on the bench? Is Frank Vogel going to be able to say to Russell Westbrook, we're not playing you in the last 5 minutes of important playoff games? I find that hard to believe. I got to believe he's going to be on the floor. And I just don't think the rest of the roster, the guys that they lost, that they shipped out to Washington, they're going to miss those guys, because they were guys that were capable of contributing on both ends of the floor. When you think about Kuzma, you think about KCP, you think about losing Caruso to the Bulls. Those were all guys that could make contributions on both ends of the floor. And the Lakers missed those guys. And I just don't think that – I don't think LeBron is at a level where he can just carry them. I don't think AD is ready to take that mantle. And I don't think Westbrook is a good fit with – Davis and LeBron.
Those are all fair points, Mike. All fair points that I can't argue with. I haven't liked what I've seen. The body language hasn't been good.
And, you know, I'm regretting my pick at the beginning of the season.
Where do you think they finish? Just look, I mean, looking at the standings right now, they're ninth.
I think they're going to be in the top. I mean, I think they're going to end up in the top six or seven. Like, I think they're going to end in the top six. I think it'll all come together. Like, there's no way. Oh, I shouldn't say no way. I just don't think that they're not going to be in the top six. You know,
they're not catching Golden State, Phoenix, or Utah.
No. I think they could be in the top six, though. Would you agree? I think they could be in the top six.
They could be. I think they're right in the mix. I think when you're looking at the next, let's say spots 4 through 8, I think there's just the same way we've talked about these tiers. But if you look at team number 10 is the Timberwolves. So I think what you're looking at is the Timberwolves, and I would have said, last week we said the Kings are going to fight out for that last spot. And that's still probably true because I think both of those teams are dysfunctional in their own ways. And even though Minnesota's won 4 in a row, I don't know that I'm going to put a tremendous amount of faith that they're going to go on some big run. You can see them losing 7 or 8 in a row and Sacramento putting it together for a week or two and being right there. I think those two teams are better than the Thunder, Spurs, Pelicans, and Rockets like we talked about last week. So you're basically looking at six teams. I guess there's six teams for those final three spots in the top six. So Clippers, Mavs, Grizzlies, Blazers, Nuggets, Lakers. Any of those teams you could tell me would finish in the top six and you could make a believable case for it. I kind of think the Lakers, just by virtue of guys getting hurt, guys resting, I see the Lakers finishing in the play-in. Now, I don't know where that is, but I see them finishing outside the top six, not necessarily because they aren't a top six team, but because of circumstance, whether that's injury or whether that's just them still kind of playing around with lineup combinations. I think some of these other teams are going to kind of keep it together and stay ahead of them. I see the Lakers finishing like 7 or 8 in the West.
I mean, once again, they finished there last year.
LeBron missed a lot of time last year, obviously, which impacted where they finished. But who's to say that he's been nicked up a lot more in the last 3 years than he ever was during his time with the Cavs? So who's to say he's not going to have another stretch where he misses 2 weeks or 3 weeks with a groin injury or he twists an ankle or whatever it might be? And clearly this team, as I said earlier, I just don't think if Davis is your number one, I don't know where you're going with that. Like, as much as I love Anthony Davis and he's unbelievably talented on both ends of the floor, he just doesn't seem like a guy that's going to say, hey, jump on my back, I'm going to carry us for this amount of time. He just doesn't seem like he has that in him. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if he had an opportunity to do that with a better team around him, maybe he could. But to this point in LA, he hasn't shown it.
Once again, valid point. Listen, I don't trust Russell Westbrook as far as I can throw him. So that's all I'm going to say. I can't throw him very far, Mike. So
I understand. I understand.
Know, just putting it out there. All right. So the other news that came out, Luke Walton. We were right, Mike. You know, I think I feel like last week on the podcast I said, I don't know if Luke Walton's the first coach fired. And then they miraculously fired him. I have to say there had to be some kind of dissension in the ranks. And I know they've lost 8 in a row. I don't know. Did they play tonight? Do they win? I don't know.
They lost 4 in a row. They're 2-8 in their last 10. They've lost 4 in a row.
Okay, they lost 4 in a row. I knew they had lost a bunch, and it didn't. But, like, I thought for sure that he was going to, like, survive because they had looked at least competent. But apparently they just said enough is enough. I got to imagine there's been some kind of dissension in the ranks or something that kind of ended up being the breaking point. I haven't read exactly what happened, if anything, quote-unquote, new happened.
I don't think there's any one particular driving force. I just think that the problem in Sacramento, more than anything else, just seems to be crazy ownership that is either unrealistic, is meddling, wants a bigger say in what goes on the basketball side of things. And I think no matter who you bring in there, it's going to be difficult. Now, Alvin Gentry is named the interim coach. We know he's had multiple opportunities as a head coach around the league. A competent NBA coach. I certainly wouldn't say a great NBA coach. Question is, what's he going to do with this roster? They have some interesting pieces. I was reading that article on The Ringer today about De'Aaron Fox and just kind of where he is statistically compared to last year, and his numbers across the board are down. Now, they drafted Davion Mitchell, so now you have this basically four-guard rotation with Heald, Mitchell, Halliburton, and Fox. But he's not shooting as good a percentage. He's just not as efficient as he's been in the past. And the bottom line is he still can't knock down threes. I've been a big De'Aaron Fox fan.
You've been as much of a De'Aaron Fox fan as I am a Carmelo fan, Mike.
Yeah, I just think De'Aaron Fox, if you give him the right kind of team around him, that he can be effective. He's still only 23 years old. He's got to develop the ability to shoot the ball so that teams can't dunk under screens on him. And it just makes yourself a lot easier to guard when you can't knock down shots on a consistent basis. But I still like De'Aaron Fox. Now, maybe he needs to change the scenery. Maybe Sacramento looks at it and says, hey, let's see what we can get for De'Aaron Fox, because we have Halliburton, we have Mitchell, we have Heald. Maybe end up that's your three-guard rotation. You can ship De'Aaron Fox somewhere and get something back in return. I think when you look at this current iteration of Sacramento, you can trace a lot of their problems back to the Marvin Bagley selection, right?
Oh, yeah. He's been god-awful.
Well, not only the fact that you got nothing out of Marvin Bagley, so you blew the pick, but you also missed on taking Luka, which obviously is the biggest mistake. You could have also had Trey, which would look good in any uniform. And then you have Marvin Bagley's dad, who's been basically trashing the team on social media all the time.
OBJ.
It just seems like that whole place is a mess, and I'm not sure what you can do to fix it. I like some of their individual players. I think that if you get the coaching right, that maybe you can start to turn it around a little bit. But organizationally, the team's never going to win until you get ownership out of the basketball side of the operations. And everything that I've heard, seen, read is that ultimately the basketball management team, general manager, vice president of operations, whoever it is that should be making decisions, is oftentimes overridden by Vivek and ownership. And so that just doesn't work.
Let me ask you the question. I want you to tell me, Marvin Bagley, would you rather I'm going to go through the rest of the lottery picks.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me, would you rather have Marvin Bagley or that player?
Okay.
Luka, I'm not even going to say anything. Jaren Jackson Jr.
Yes, you'd rather have Jaren Jackson Jr.
Trae Young, we already know the answer. Wendell Carter.
Yes.
Okay. Sexton.
Yes.
Yes. Bridges.
Yes.
SGA.
Yes.
Michael Porter Jr.
You have to say yes, but that's a topic we can hit on in a second.
Jalen Brunson.
I mean, probably yes, right? I mean, yeah. Brunson's been a productive player for the Mavericks.
Mitchell Robinson.
Yes, been productive for the Knicks.
Okay, so that's the rest of – that's through – oh, wait, hold on. That was – oh, wait, even worse. Mitchell Robinson.
You went out of order with some of those guys.
Well, I just went with the highlight guys. I didn't look at the whole. Okay, Mo Bamba.
I mean, it's debatable, but Bamba's been more productive this year.
Knox.
You might rather have Marvin Bagley.
Okay. Jerome Robinson. I don't even know who that is.
He was a Clippers pick?
Yeah. He didn't turn out anything good.
I don't think he's even in the league.
Dante DiVincenzo.
You'd rather have Dante.
Kevin Herder.
You'd obviously rather have the Velvet Assassin. Come on.
Grayson Allen?
You'd rather have Grayson Allen for sure.
Anthony Simons for sure. Landry Shamet for sure. I mean, these guys are all goals. Oh, Omari Spellman.
Spellman played, I mean, I don't know. Is he on a team this year? Is Spellman still on a team? I'm not sure, but he's been in the NBA.
He's playing in the Korean Basketball League now.
Okay, so he hasn't been all that productive in his NBA career. The question with Marvin Bagley is,
I think there's two things. One, how much has the circumstances of where he is impacted his development? So you have the circumstances and the injuries that he suffered while he's in Sacramento. But I think the bigger picture is, if he is given a change of scenery, what position is he and what's he effective at? Because he's a big who really doesn't protect the rim. So he's not a shot blocker. He's not a guy who is going to patrol the paint and keep teams from driving to the basket. And then offensively, he's not really a good shooter. So he's not spacing the floor for you. He's so slight and skinny, he's not really dominating in the post. I'm not sure what he does well. So if you're a team, obviously he had talent and still there's talent there. So maybe a team takes a flyer on him, but it just seems like there's a long history of these guys who have theoretically underachieved their potential, and it's not like most of them don't turn it around. I'm thinking just in recent years, you think about a Jabari Parker who, yeah, he had some injuries, but never really materialized and turned into what people thought as the second pick. I had somebody else on the tip of my tongue that I was thinking of that's sort of along those same lines. Oh, I just lost the... Anyway, maybe I'll think of that other guy that I just had on the tip of my tongue that I was thinking about that's similar. Oh, Michael Beasley, who number two pick, goes behind Derrick Rose and has a semi-functional career here and there, but certainly never lived up to what people thought he was going to be when he came out of Kansas State. So, I don't know.
Michael Beasley. That guy, every time I looked at him, I thought he was on some kind of drugs.
It might have been.
I don't know. Listen.
Might well have been. Sacramento's a mess. Bottom line is, it's a poorly run franchise. It's a poorly run organization. And until you get the organizational piece of it right, it's going to be really hard to put a winning product out on the floor. And look, Sacramento, with the talent they have, they should be better than those bottom four teams in the West. And they should be competing with, you'd have to think, the Timberwolves for that 10th spot, which is really the only, in my mind, the only open slot in the Western Conference. But who knows? It wouldn't be surprising at all if they just completely go in the tank and Minnesota limps their way to that 10th spot. Minnesota with Towns and Anthony Edwards. I mean, those are two guys that potentially, theoretically, can be all NBA type players, and nobody in that bottom rung has anybody comparable to either of those guys.
All right, we're jumping around a little bit here, Mike, but let's talk Cleveland now. I think it's time to talk at the Cavs. Here's what I'm going to say. We are struck by the injury bugs. Obviously, Colin Sexton, as we previously mentioned, out for the season, torn MCL. We got Evan Mobley, who sounds like he's going to be back sooner than they anticipated. I don't know if I'm reading between the lines. You know, I'm not saying he's playing tomorrow, but Saturday, Monday, possibly. So that would be good news. Listen, we should have never lost that. Like the Brooklyn game, the first Brooklyn game, they hung in the game the whole way. The Warriors game, we lost by 15. It was not a 15-point game. We just fell apart in the fourth quarter. And Steph just went nuts.
We got Steph in that game. Yep. How about that? Okay.
And then last night, Brooklyn, once again, we were in the game. We had the lead for majority of the game. And then we just kind of fell apart in the third and fourth quarter. But once again, that was after Garland got whacked upside the head. Didn't get called for a foul, by the way. Like, and I know it was a loose ball and an incidental contact, but still, I mean, it sure looked like it should have been something. Regardless, he came back into the game, shot 1 for 10 the rest of the game. He clearly wasn't 100% right there. But I'm, you know, they lost 4 in a row, but I'm encouraged because they've been in every one of those games. And I think the 15 points loss to the Golden State, like, I don't even think of it as a 15-point loss because we were in it. We were in the lead the majority of the game. We were right there, and then the fourth quarter, they just blitzed us, and we didn't play well. So I'm encouraged, Mike. What do you think of the Cavs? Even though they've lost 4 in a row, I'm encouraged.
Good signs going forward. I think when you look at the Cavs and you see where they're at in the moment, you got to love what Garland has been able to do to this point this season. Clearly, he's taken a step forward to where people thought that he might be able to get as a point guard as a guy who can score but who can also distribute the ball, which we didn't see very much of, I don't think, in his first year. You started to see it a little bit last year, and he's really starting to come into his own this year. So when you think about Darius Garland as a future member of a winning Cavs team, I think you have to be encouraged there. Obviously, Mobley, we've talked about a ton. He's going to be a guy who can have an impact on both ends of the floor as a 19-year-old rookie. And 2, 3, 4 years down the road, he has a chance to be one of the 10 best players in the league because he's going to do it on both ends. And as he gets stronger, as he continues to develop his skills, I think he's going to be a potential top 10 player. I think he's an all-star year in and year out in another year. He's that good. He's that good on both ends of the floor. And then you look at Jared Allen, and there were a lot of people, I think us included, who at least semi-questioned giving Jared Allen $100 million, but he's been...
I think it turned out okay, Mike.
I think he's been...
So far.
Yeah, he's been really, really good, and he also strikes me as a guy that I think he's already better than anything that he showed previously when he was with the Nets and even what he showed us when he came over last year.
Listen, I don't really say any... I don't see a lot of positives about Austin Carr's analysis, okay? A lot of times, he sounds like your drunk uncle... That you know.
The best part of Austin Carr, honestly, you know what the best part of it is?
What?
Is when something bad happens to the other team and he just cackles. And you see some play happen and then you just hear Austin Carr's cackle in the background. That's the best part.
Austin Carr said something I thought very profound. And he said, and I can't believe I'm saying this, he said that he feels like Jared Allen wasn't in the right situation and the people in Brooklyn didn't appreciate him. And then him getting that contract showed that we appreciated what he was doing and it made him work harder. Whereas when you think about it, like a lot of times people get the contract and what do, Mike?
They stagnate.
Slack off. They stagnate. Whereas Jared Allen feels appreciated. He has a role. He's playing that role. He understands his role. And it's having him excel more. And I don't know, is that great analysis? No, but when he said that, I was like, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. Like, that really does. So, you know, cheers up to you, Austin Carr. You made me think that you said something profound. So
those three guys fit long term. You can see a winning lineup with Darius Garland, Jared Allen, and Evan Mobley as a part of it. So I think those three guys.
Mike, I'm willing to say it. I'm willing to say this too, Mike.
What?
I think Lauri Markkanen fits.
Markkanen fits. I think he's a guy who you can argue that he's overpaid, but I do think that Markkanen can have a role on a winning Cavs team. What that role exactly is, I'm not sure. I think Markkanen has some skills at his size that are valuable in this league. And Markkanen's history tells you that A, he's not that durable, and B, that he's not necessarily consistent and doesn't bring it every single night. But the ceiling of Lauri Markkanen is definitely worth, to me, taking a flyer, because you're not going to get a player with that kind of upside to sign in as a free agent in Cleveland very often. So I think bringing in Markkanen is a good move. And then, you know, the two other pieces that we have that are young that sort of fit this timeline, I think I'm a little less sure about in terms of Sexton. First of all, I don't know, this season with him out now, you start to see that things without him sort of make more sense, despite the fact that you're missing a guy who averaged 24 points a game last year. The injury obviously hurts the Cavs figuring out what they have and how he fits in and what they're going to do with him in terms of his extension. It also hurts if they decide that he's not part of their future and they want to trade him for something. When you have a guy coming off an injury, I'm sure his trade value is not going to be as high as it might have been this offseason. But I don't think you can win long-term with Garland and Sexton as your backcourt. But I think
Sexland isn't going to be no more?
I think it's no more. I think in the offseason, that you try to work a deal for Sexton and you try to get something back in return. I don't think you want to pay Sexton what somebody else is probably going to be willing to pay him, is my guess. Because you're going to see this year that he's expendable. And then I think Okoro, I don't really know what to make of him yet. He's got to be able to shoot and do more offensively. He's really good on the defensive end of the floor. But on offense, it still feels like he's, at best, he's a net neutral. And I'd say more often than not, he's probably a net negative.
I feel like he's in the wrong era, Mike. I feel like if he was a late 90s, early 2000s, you know, Pistons player, he'd fit that team really good.
Yeah, he doesn't shoot threes, so he's not going to space the floor for you. I don't feel like he's especially even dynamic putting the ball on the floor and getting the rim. I'm not sure offensively what he does well. I don't know what he's contributing on that end of the floor. Defensively, he's a menace. He's very good. I think he's decent as a rebounder. But offensively, he's got a long way to go to be a guy who's going to be a plus on that end of the floor. So he's a guy who you can have in your rotation as a winning team, but I don't know that if Isaac Okoro is your starter, either as the two or the three, I'm not sure that's what you want. You better have a lot of scoring around him to make up for what his offensive deficiencies are. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But again, the key right now is Mobley. If Mobley can really be what he's flashed signs of here in the early going, where he's got the potential to be one of the best players in the league, now suddenly everything else falls into place and makes sense. So it gives you a lot of options.
Before we predict how the Cavs are going to do the next week, I want to read the text that I received from friend of the pod. We haven't had him on the pod before, but you know him, Steve Freem. Sends me a text. He went to the Cavs game last night.
Okay.
Up close and in person, Kevin Love's physique looks like he works at a desk for an insurance company.
Okay.
So I got that text. I thought you would appreciate it.
Does he need to go back to chubby Kevin Love? Is that what we're talking about?
I
don't know.
I feel like Kevin Love has been serviceable. So I've had
no problem with Love other than what you're paying him. If you were paying him a reasonable amount based on what his production is, he's been a positive member of this team to this point.
Yep. I mean, and you know, I feel like he's been a good leader, and I think he's good for these young guys. I think he is. So there's that. All right. And we went that whole time, we didn't talk about Ricky Rubio. Man, I don't know how we got Ricky Rubio.
Rubio's been awesome. The guy shoots it in a way that I don't know that I've ever seen him shoot the ball as well as he's shooting it for the Cavs this year. And he sort of locks everything into place because he's just a guy who understands how to play. He's a guy who finds people that are – when you're open, he finds you. And he's just a solid pro that runs the team in such a way.
Do you think he's the most important player on the Cavs for like the success that we're having this year? Or is it –
Because it depends on how you define important. To me, I look at him as he's the connective tissue between the guys who are probably more important than him, but he connects everybody else and makes it all make sense. I think if you replace Rubio with Sexton, just on paper, theoretically, Sexton is the better asset. Theoretically, he's the better player, but I think Rubio lifts everybody else's play, whereas I'm not sure Sexton does that. So Rubio's been great. He's been absolutely tremendous for the Cavs.
His ball handling, I guess I've never really watched his ball handling. It's pretty otherworldly. Like what he does, how he moves.
He just knows how to pass. I mean, you look at him and you say, okay, he's not that quick. I'm not sure what exactly his favorite move is, but he just has a knack for kind of slithering his way past guys and into openings. And then he's just got such great vision that he sees cuts, I think, before sometimes cutters even see him. And the moment a guy breaks open, the ball's there. And then his shooting has been otherworldly compared to, I think, his reputation, obviously, since he's coming to the league, is that he's a guy who can't shoot and, at least early in his career, was unwilling to shoot. And we haven't seen any evidence of either of those things here in Cleveland. I think he's been willing to shoot, and he's been shooting the ball really well. He's been a huge key to what the Cavs have been able to do.
Yep. All right, so Cavs play Phoenix tomorrow night. That's a loss. Right?
Yes, Phoenix has won 13 in a row, so I would say the odds are, yes, that Phoenix is going to come in here and take care of business.
Okay. Saturday, we play the Orlando Magic. That's a
win. You better get that one.
Yep. And then, they better get that one. And then next Monday, we play at Dallas. That's a 50-50 one to me. Luka played tonight. He didn't look good in the first half. I don't know what he ended up doing tonight. They're still playing. They're going to win. He must have played better in the second half because, he ends up with 26. He had 15 in the third quarter. So he did not look good in the first half. And obviously, he's getting back from an injury. So
it's to be expected. On the road at Dallas, that's probably a loss.
Yep. Probably. You're probably right.
So their next week they're 1-2.
So next week they're 1-2.
They're 1-2 probably.
If Mobley comes back, does that change your prognostication? Do they beat Dallas if Mobley's there?
Gives them a better opportunity, I think. I'd still probably pick Dallas at home, but gives them a better opportunity if Mobley's in the lineup for sure.
Okay. All right.
I think when you look at the schedule, I know we don't want to go through the whole rest of the schedule, but just as you look at it, I think one of the things that strikes me as I'm kind of looking through it and thinking about wins and losses is just how good the league is top to bottom. Like there really aren't any teams that, I shouldn't say there aren't any because there are some, but all the pushovers with the exception of Detroit and Orlando are in the Western Conference and there just aren't. So the Cavs are playing those teams only twice. And you just look at the schedule and you're looking at the teams and there just aren't any easy games,
we've had one of the tougher schedules so far, if I remember correctly.
And I think it stays tough. It stays tough for a while, and obviously it all evens out at some point. But I think the Cavs are going to be, I don't want to say well below 500, but they're going to be 5 or 6 games below 500 before the schedule kind of eases up and they can maybe get back to their winning ways. I still think when you look at where they sit in the Eastern Conference, that they're still going to have a good opportunity to compete for that 9-10 play-in spot. I think trying to get anywhere above that is going to be really tough for them.
Yep. We've only played one game in division, too. That's just kind of crazy at this point in the season that we've only had one division game so far.
Absolutely.
All right, Mike, tonight, I don't know, you probably haven't even seen this because it happened in garbage time of the Portland game. Tonight, there was a dunk between the legs. You believe that? In a game. By
Greg Brown. Greg Brown. I see it right here.
Yeah. Garbage time. Okay. There's only been one other player that's dunked between the legs in an NBA game. Can you name that player?
All right. I'm going to say J.R. Ryder.
No.
Zach LaVine.
No, it's a guy he played for the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Ricky Davis.
It is Ricky Davis.
All right, there you go.
Garbage time. We were losing by 25 to the Philadelphia 76ers with 2 minutes left, and he did a between the legs dunk. It's almost like that he was trying to get a triple dunk.
Yeah. Who would have thought Ricky Davis would ever do that?
Yeah.
The Greg Brown dunk is pretty. That's a pretty good dunk.
It's pretty good. I mean, it wasn't like he slowed down or anything. He was just like, if you look carefully in the back right corner, Austin Rivers gets up and walks off the bench after he does it. And it's like 53 seconds left in the game.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you have an anonymous name like Greg Brown, you got to be remembered for something. So you might as well be remembered for that. Nice. Congratulations, Greg Brown. Good work, my man.
Yeah, good work.
Hey, at least he did it in a win.
Didn't win. Yeah, it wasn't Ricky Davis in a 25-point loss to Philadelphia. All right. The other big news that I think we should talk about is the Michael Porter Jr. situation. You want to talk about that? Like, what does Denver do? Like, they're obviously now Jokic, and Jokic didn't play tonight as well. He's injured. So you got Jokic injured. You got Michael Porter injured. You got Jamal Murray obviously out injured. Like, what is Denver going to do? Like, can they do anything?
Like,
I think you're relying on, obviously, Jokic has to get back healthy. I'm just looking at what they're saying about his injuries. So he's got a right wrist sprain, which is obviously his shooting hand. They're unsure of when he's going to return. So if he's out, clearly we talked about, I think last week, the on-off numbers with Jokic in the lineup and Jokic out of the lineup and just what a huge difference there is between the two. And if he's not there and Michael Porter Jr. is not there, Denver's going to be very, very lucky. I mean, I don't think they're in danger of falling down into that bottom group, but if Jokic is out for any length of time, they're not going to win while he's out very often. And the Michael Porter Jr. loss, it would be interesting to know when those back problems started, because clearly many, many people, myself included, thought that he was due, especially with Jamal Murray continuing to be out, that he was going to come in and be a great second fiddle to Jokic. And that has not been the case, was not the case before he got hurt. He was definitely underperforming where people thought he was going to be, severely underperforming it. And now with this potential back injury, which we know he has a history of back problems, which is one of the reasons why a guy who was clearly rated the number one player in the high school class ended up dropping to whatever he was, 13 or 14, and fell to the Nuggets in that draft. It's concerning. I mean, if you're Denver, you just sign him to a huge, huge max contract, and now the guy's going out with back problems for the second time in his career with something that's been recurring. So you can't feel good about where you sit if you're Denver in terms of the Michael Porter Jr. situation. I do think that Jokic gets back and maybe eventually you get Murray back. I think the rest of the roster with those two guys around them is fine and makes sense. Will Barton actually has been playing really, really well, and Aaron Gordon's having a decent year. So I think they'll be okay, but man, their ceiling as a championship team, if Michael Porter is completely out for the rest of the season, which I know that that's what they're talking about, potentially could happen. I don't know. You can't feel good if you're Denver at this point.
Yep, I agree, Mike. You definitely cannot feel Denver is a team that you really could take seriously to contend in the East, or the West, I'm sorry. But you know who you can feel good for, Mike?
Who?
Amon Shumpert.
Dancing with the Stars. See, I know that.
Champion. Oh, wow. I'm impressed, Mike.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I did not see 1 second of Amon Shumpert dancing, but I do know I saw or heard that somewhere, probably on Twitter.
Yeah, cool. He won that, so that was good. That was congrats to Amon Shumpert. Do you know what you can't feel good about, Mike?
What's that?
The Cleveland Browns.
Are we ready to start the Browns talk already? We're not talking about any other teams?
We're at 50 minutes the podcast already, Mike. I mean, is there anything else pressing that we need to talk about?
I mean, I don't know. There's not really anything, I guess, that is jumping off the page at me that is so startling. I still think I still continue to be surprised by the Warriors at 15-2. I think
they've had the easiest schedule so far.
They have probably. And Clay, I guess, scrimmaged 5-on-5 today for the first time, so he's probably not that far away. I think that I'm still not convinced. We talked about it a little last week. I'm still not convinced that they're as overwhelming.
Are they going to win 60 games, Mike?
No way. I think as their schedule toughens up.
They're not going to go 60 and 20. They're not going to go 60 and 22.
The league's too good. The league's too balanced. I don't see it.
Where do they top out at? 55?
Yeah, I think they probably win 55 games.
Okay, I'll take the over.
All right, that's fair.
Mark it down.
11-24. You think them or Phoenix ends up with a better record?
I think they're both going to end up over 55.
Yeah, that could be.
So I'm going to write it down right now. I'm going to write down this little note right here.
Okay.
Write this down. I'm going to stick it right here. 11-24. JS over 55 Warriors.
I'll take the under.
So 55 is a push? 55 is a push?
55 is a push. I'll take the under.
Okay. What do you think about Phoenix?
I think Phoenix is an over. I'll take the over on Phoenix.
Okay. All right.
I think Phoenix finishes number one in the West.
Okay. I think they're both going to end up in the over as well. I'm not really to declare who's going to be the number one seed. I feel good about them both.
Those three teams that are in the top three spots right now are probably going to be the three teams that finish in the top three. Barring injury.
The way that I look at Warriors, Mike, is they're 15-2. They have to go 41 and what? Let me do the math here.
41-18.
And 18 the rest of the way.
No, that's more. They would have to 41 and 20, right?
41 and 20, that's 61. Yeah. No, they're 82 games. Oh, my God. I'm a math teacher. Hold on. There's 82. It's 1 o'clock.
That would get them to 60 and 22. That would get them 60 wins.
Yeah. So they can do it. Come on.
You got your scrap paper over there, man.
I got it.
All right, so those are our top three in the West, which I think – the West is kind of settling into sort of what it's going to be.
Garbage mess. We don't even know what's going on in the East.
The West is going to be a dogfight for those four, five, six spots between those six teams that we talked about earlier. On the other hand, in the Eastern Conference, right now you have your top three, Brooklyn, Miami, and the Bulls. Then you have four. The Wizards are not going to end up in the top three. The Hornets are not going to end up in the top three. The Knicks are not going to end up in the top three. The Celtics are not going to end up in the top three. I think Milwaukee is going to displace one of those teams for sure. And I think Philly could
be a team. No, come on. No.
I'm out on Philly too. I don't think they're going to get there either because I've been quite clear in my non-belief in Joel Embiid's ability to A, carry a team, and B, carry a team healthy out on the floor. So yeah, Philly, I think potentially could, especially if the Simmons thing gets settled in some way, shape, or form.
Not happening.
I don't think so either, but they could. I don't think anybody else on that list can. And
the SS Zion's going to play before Simmons, so we got
that may be true. And I think Atlanta, weirdly Atlanta, who's in the 11th seed.
Listen, Mike, you look at the records. The 13th seed is 5.5 games back in the East, okay?
I know.
You look at the West, the 13th seed is 10.5 games back. And I know that Golden State's 15-2, so that's greatly extrapolated. But you even take it to the 13th seed is 7 games behind the 3rd seed. So it's like the East is so much more condensed. It's so much more competitive. Yeah. Like, right. I'm willing to say that the East is better than the West now.
The East is better than the West. I agree.
100%. So that this goes back to what's going on in the NFL, too, is like all these teams are going to be playing each other. So, like, you play more teams.
Wait. Before we go NFL, last thing.
No. I'm saying all these teams in the East are – I'm not going NFL yet. I'm saying it's like what's going on in the NFL with the AFC North and the AFC West all having to play each other. Every game's a playoff game. In the NFL, when we're looking at these Eastern Conference games, almost every game is going to be a playoff game because you're playing against the Eastern Conference teams and they're all bundled together. So you're going to have games, you're going to have teams that are, like, listen, if the Cavs would have won either of those Brooklyn games, I don't think anyone would have been completely surprised because that's the way the East has been playing this year. Whereas like in the beginning of this, before the season started, if you would have told me that the Cavs were going to be competitive with them, we would have said no. But at the same time, you look at the West, Houston is not being competitive with anyone. Like, they've won one game. The Pelicans, I know they've won three now, but that's still pitiful. Like, those are easy games. Like, even Detroit, you know, Detroit's hanging around in games. They're not like
getting... And with Cade, I think they're 4-7 with Cade and 0-6 without him. So
they're not terrible. And listen, Orlando winning four games at this point in the season, that's more than I thought they were going to win at this point in the season. So listen,
those are the only two teams that you circle on the schedule and go, I think that's like you got to count on that as a win. And I don't mean count on it if they can't win. And
Orlando still got like Cole Anthony's a player. Like he's playing pretty well. Bamba's actually having a somewhat decent season. Like, he's not great, but listen,
I'm not saying that we shouldn't beat them, but what I'm saying is, like, they're not a complete pushover. In my opinion, Detroit and Orlando can both compete if they want to. The main pushovers are the Western Conference teams. Like, I can't believe I'm saying I think the Spurs are a pushover team. Like, they're garbage.
It definitely feels that way. Anyways, all right, who's your top three in the East? So, top three in the West, we agree, is going to probably be...
As of now,
Warriors, Suns, Jazz in the West. Yeah. You don't disagree
with
that.
As of now, right? Mike, I think Chicago has looked the best out of the three top teams. I'm not saying that that's where they're going to end up. I think when I've watched Chicago games, I feel better about where they're at, considering that basically their whole roster is new. I feel best about Chicago. I probably feel second best about Miami, and I feel third best about Brooklyn. But like even saying that, I think last night, obviously Durant is just playing out of his mind, and he continues to play out of his mind. And I feel like if he continues to play that way, that they should be feared greatly, because like every time he got the ball last night, I thought he was going to score when I was watching the game.
Absolutely.
And then Harden actually is fitting his role. And I know it's a regular season, but he's when Durant's off the floor, he's doing what he needs to do to, you know, keep Brooklyn afloat. And I think Patty Mills is a really good player. So like Brooklyn's there. So right as of now, those three teams are probably my top three. Obviously the East is way more condensed. Like I think Milwaukee, as they get their guys back, are probably going to supplant either Brooklyn or Chicago. But right now out of all the teams in the East, out of the eye test, I feel like Chicago's the best team. And that's just the eye test.
All right. So I would probably bump the Bulls from the top three and put the Bucks in there. I think the top three in some order ends up being Brooklyn, Miami, and Milwaukee.
You're saying right now, the Bucks are better than.
I'm saying at the end of the season.
I was talking right now, but
I'm saying the end of the season. Who's going to finish in the top three? Who's your top three seeds at the end of the season?
Brooklyn and Milwaukee are in the top three, and then probably Miami.
That's what I think.
And then Chicago's fourth, I think.
I think the Bulls to this point, from what we've seen, I think they've proven themselves that they got an excellent chance to be a top four seed. None of those other teams below them, I'd say, are a shoo-in. I think Atlanta, I already talked about Philly. I don't see anybody else creeping up into that.
We've beaten all the rest of those teams. We've beaten the rest of all those teams except for Washington. We beat Charlotte. We beat the Knicks. We beat Atlanta. The
Celtics. Yeah.
We beat Toronto. Like,
yeah. Look, the Cavs are competitive. They're going to be competitive. They have good players, and I think they stay in that competition for those final couple play-in spots. I think the top three ends up being Brooklyn, Miami, and Milwaukee. As Milwaukee gets healthy, I just think.
And I'm pretty sure that's what we predicted at the beginning of the season, Mike.
I'm pretty sure. I agree.
All right. Browns. God, that was so bad, Mike. That was so terrible. And listen, I'm going to say it. Like, there's no reason Baker Mayfield should have been playing in that game. He should have not been playing. But we don't need to spend, like, all night analyzing, like, why he's playing. I admire him. I don't think anyone can go out there and say that he's not tough and he's not, but he's not giving them the best chance to win. He's not good.
I mean, guys are wide open that the ball's nowhere near them, and you can't win in the NFL when you can't throw the ball downfield to guys who are open running 15 or 20 yard routes, and you can't get the ball to them when they're wide open. And that's just reality. It makes it too hard on your offense to move the ball when you can't make those kind of plays.
I think if he was healthy, he'd be making the throws more. He's not healthy. He can't do it. Like, he's just physically not able to. Like, when he took that scramble in the fourth quarter and he went around, you know which scramble I'm talking about?
Yes.
I was sitting next to my dad. I was at my parents' with my kids watching the game, and I looked at him and said, "Why is he out there? Like, he's gonna get, like, I thought for sure he was gonna get popped, and he didn't." Like, you can't tell me on Sunday night that the Browns would have a better chance to win with him over Case Keenum. I can't believe that at this point. Like, and I'm not saying that Case Keenum's going to get us the victory, but like the probability, if the way to do it would be the Vegas line Okay. Right now, it's probably, I don't even know. The guess the lines, I think when we listen to Simmons and Cousin Sal, I think the Ravens were favored by 3.5, which is ludicrous to me. It's in Baltimore. I would, they're not a half a point team better than us at home. Anyways, if Case Keenum comes in the game, is the line really going to move? I think the line might even move in the Browns' favor, right?
Look, Baker's been bad. He's been bad. And there's no way around that, whether it's injury, whether it's just who or what he is. I don't know that Case Keenum gives you a better chance to win. I mean, Baker's been bad, but Case Keenum's a backup for a reason.
Highest paid backup in the league, Mike.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't be disappointed if that's who I saw under center against the Ravens on Sunday. The bottom line is this team, I just don't know. I don't know what they're supposed to be good at. I mean, Nick Chubb and their running backs, their running game is good, but you have to be able to throw the ball and hit guys who are wide open. I'm not even asking you to put darts in there when the guy's double covered, but you got to be able to hit guys who are open. And this team and Baker right now just aren't capable of doing that. And the fact that you struggled to beat the winless Lions at home doesn't give you a whole lot of confidence. And yet you look at what Baltimore's done and they continuously just keep pulling games out of their rear end. I mean, they just pull these games out of their rear end, seems like week in and week out. So I don't know that there's some kind of huge juggernaut team. So I won't be surprised if the Browns are competitive and give themselves a chance to win on Sunday. Their season comes down to the next two games, right? So you have the game in Baltimore, then you have a bye week, and then you come back and play the Ravens in Cleveland. So basically, your season relies on these two games. If you win both, you're sitting pretty good. You probably have the lead in the division. If you split, you're still alive to compete for a playoff spot. And if you lose both, I think you're pretty, at that point, you're pretty much packing it in.
Yep, I agree. 100%, wholeheartedly agree with that statement. By the way, Mike, just so you know, the Clippers just completed a 10-point comeback with 80 seconds left. They were down 102-92 with 85 seconds left, and they tied the game and forced overtime.
Now Dallas is up 110-103 in overtime.
All right. Okay.
Well, according to what I have, I don't know if you're watching it.
I'm not watching the game. It's not on TV. I was just looking at stats.
So it's 110-103 Mavericks with a minute 42 in overtime.
That's kind of impressive that they came back from 10 down.
That
with
is
80 seconds left.
Yeah, that's quite a comeback in a very short period of time. That's a little Reggie Miller-esque right there.
Yep. All right. Anyways, anything else, Mike? Well,
no, I think we're good.
Okay. Perfect.
So we want everybody out there, first of all, thanks for listening. Please have a happy Thanksgiving. I know that in a lot of places around the country, high schools are opening up their schedule here on Thanksgiving weekend. So to all of our coaches out there, good luck as your season starts on the high school level. Of course, college coaches across the country have been back playing here now for a couple weeks. So good luck to all of our coaches who have been gracious enough to be guests here on the Hoopheads pod. Good luck to those coaches out there who are a part of our audience, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.